from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Identify the player.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. Happy New Year to y'all. As you know, this show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who just want to figure it out here in Music City.
That's right. Now, we don't know anything.
No.
We're in our 10th year. We're still trying to figure it out. We are out there during the day slinging songs just like you guys are. What we are able to do is find brilliant people, bring them into the studio to pick their brains and answer your questions.
That's true. Now, listen, here's what you do. You go to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can like us and chime in with your questions and comments there. Conversation's starting right now.
I'm there.
Yep. And listen, we got a fun show tonight.
Yeah.
We got a songwriter, former member of the band Toto, and amazing producer, Buddy Hyatt, visiting with us here in hour one.
That's right. And then hit songwriter Natalie Hemby. Oh, my gosh. She's written just about everything lately.
Yeah.
We'll be here in hour two to discuss her craft. And she has her first ever solo album.
Yeah.
Coming out next week.
Yeah, Puxico, yeah. It's called.
Yeah.
But first, listen, we've teased a big announcement in the last couple shows regarding a change that we're going to be making to the show starting this month.
Yes.
We're committed to continue bringing in hit writers and recording artists and industry leaders like folks we got tonight to the show for you. But you know what? Once a month, we're going to start to change it up a little bit and shine the spotlight on local songwriters.
That's right. One full show each month, we're going to be spinning songs from and visiting with the characters that we see all the time at the Songwriters Nights, networking events, song pitches, and so on. Our fellow hitless wonders.
Yeah.
Over the years, we've gotten to know so many just amazing writers that haven't had that big break yet. But we're going to make sure that the world gets to hear them right here on The Legend, 650 AM WSM. And what we're doing, let's just tell a little bit more,
yeah,
is each show, both Hino and I are going to pick a couple of people to bring in.
Yeah.
And I've got my two picked.
Yeah.
I hope you do.
I do.
Because it's coming up.
It do.
When? January 22nd.
January 22nd. Yeah, mark your calendars.
Spread the word and get ready. We're going to have some fun.
It's going to be good. Well, we're going to have fun here tonight as well. So, Scott, why don't you do the honors?
Well, you know, we've been talking about him for like a year and a half now.
Yeah.
But now we're going to actually talk with him right here on the show. As a songwriter, he's had songs cut by Kenny Rogers, David Frizzell, Sammy Kershaw, so many others. As a keyboardist and percussionist, I didn't know that, he has toured with some of music's biggest artists. He was actually a touring member of Toto for a while, has played all over the world, all over the country. And recently, just this last year, he played Carnegie Hall, which was very cool. And as a producer, gosh, he works on so many country music greats. Projects and Nashville newcomers on full projects, and of course is our go-to guy for songwriter demo sessions.
Mm-hmm.
His career has seen him working with George Jones, Daley and Vincent, Joe DiMessina, Lee Greenwood, Tracy Lawrence, T.G. Shepherd, and so on and so on and so on. We're going to talk about all of these things and more. It is such a pleasure, after all this time, to finally say, Buddy Hyatt, we're glad you're here. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Well, thank you so much. Woo-hoo. I'm glad to be here. And
we're
going to have a good time.
So, for all those keyboard players out there, how tough was it making a name for yourself here in a guitar town? You know, cause
it was very tough, and there was a few very key people that helped me get where I am, and it's only taken me 33 years to get to where I am.
Well, they say it's a 33-year town.
Right.
Anybody that says it's less than a 5-year town doesn't know.
Yeah.
But I will mention a couple of names real quick, people that were very influential in my career, both then and now.
Mm-hmm.
And the first guy would have been Ron Cornelius. He was a fantastic musician, entertainer. I played with Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Johnny Cash. He was a master session electric guitar player on almost all the Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs stuff.
Wow.
But Ron was, at the time I moved to town in 1983, was working with Pete Drake, one of the most famous steel players alive, and he invited me to a session. Here I was, 20 years old, young and dumb, didn't know anything or anybody, and Ron said, hey, come play on this demo session. And so I did, and they handed me a piece of paper with all these numbers on it.
Oh.
And I went, okay. And I had no idea what the Nashville number system was at that time. But 33 years later, I know it well and use it every day.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So other than getting that big break, how did they guide you? You said they influenced and helped you out. What kind of advice should a new player in town hear?
Well, the less you play, the more they hear. You get guys that play on, I really love and respect our guys that play live down on Broadway, and mm-hmm. and their job is to put on a show and play a lot of notes. But when you get in the studio, it's really important that you listen to the other guys in the room and play something that works with what they're playing.
You know, that has amazed me many times to see, you know, some of these amazingly phenomenal guitar players like a Brent Mason.
Yes.
And then you'll hear a track, like, let's say on a, I don't know, George Strait song or something like that, and he's playing something that even I could play. But it works with the song, you know?
Exactly.
It's like not everything is, what's his famous song, you know, the really super complicated fast stuff, you know?
He's known for Chattahoochee.
Chattahoochee, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alan Jackson hit, and that was his brainchild. He came up with all that. And Brent knows what to play, when to play it,
yeah,
and what not to play.
Just because you're amazing doesn't mean you can't play something simple.
Exactly.
Well, and you and I talked about this, I think just even a couple of months ago, how on one of the tracks that we did, the keyboard is pretty much non-existent. But it didn't need to be there. And we had talked about, and you, Heino and I have talked about this before, you go into a studio where the guy who runs it is a bass player,
mm-hmm.
and the bass
is right out there in the front.
Predominant.
Yeah.
Or the drummer.
It's right out there in front.
The drums are right up in front. And that's one of the things I love is, you know, if keyboard or piano or organ, if it's supposed to be there, it's there.
Yeah.
If it isn't, it's okay.
I learned something a long time ago. I can lay out with the best of them.
Yeah. I can do that too.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes it's better to lay out and then to jump in and mess everything up.
Yeah. Interesting.
I show up at gigs with nothing. They're like, you didn't bring anything? I'm like, nah, I'm laying out tonight.
Yeah. It's all about
people really
out.
Appreciate that, actually, when I lay out.
That's true.
Well, someone once told me it's always better to appear stupid than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Right.
Same goes with music. If you don't know what you're doing, don't do anything. Get out of the way of the guys that do know what they're doing. Now, as a producer, I'd like to say that my strongest suit as a producer is allowing the guys that do know what they're doing to do what they do,
mm-hmm.
and not get in their way and not act like I know what I'm talking about when I don't. Most of the time, I do know what I'm talking about. But guys like Brent Mason, Lonnie Wilson, Mark Fain, Bobby Terry, James Mitchell, these great players, that's the huge resource that I draw on. Mm-hmm. To make guys like you have demos that sound like masters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. So I want to go back here. How musical was your family? And back before you moved here, what were your first couple of bands? What were you doing?
Well, I was playing in VFWs in Little Rock, Arkansas. Mm. And I got mad at my band one night. And my drummer and I packed our stuff in the middle of the gig, piled it in a 1975 Chevy van and put it on the interstate and headed to Nashville. We had $80 between us, and we had one friend in Nashville. So I'll use his name, Dave Dunseith. He's been playing now. He's been band leader and drummer for Leanne Womack for about 13 or 14 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right.
So we came here together. We didn't know anybody or anything, and the rest is history. But yes, my family was musical. My father was the organist in our Baptist church when I was 6 years old. Our piano player quit, and we couldn't find another one. So guess who got the job?
A six-year-old?
A six-year-old, yes. I knew all the songs. I play strictly by ear to this day. I do not read staff.
Really?
I only read numbers, and I play by ear. So I started when I was six, and almost 50 years later, I'm
that
still doing
awesome.
It.
That is awesome. I love that.
Wow.
I love that. So a lot of people, especially here, don't read, you know, sheet music, but are amazing players. So has that ever been a hindrance in any way?
Yes, I have been offered jobs with various big artists in the past that I could not accept because they would be doing orchestra dates, which required me to read staff.
Okay.
So it either hindered me or kept me from taking a job that I wasn't destined for anyway. So
gotcha. But in a town like this, where everything is improvised, you know, on the fly, it doesn't matter.
It has not mattered to my career. Now, there's nothing wrong with being educated and being prepared. I have played with the Nashville Symphony one time, and that was with the fabulous group Daly and Vincent.
Yeah, I love those guys.
They played the Skirmer horn, and they allowed me to come and play piano with them. And everybody had music but me. Of course, all our bluegrass guys, they know the songs. They don't need the music.
Right.
And the wonderful director-arranger lady asked me to play one of the intros that I was not scheduled to play.
Okay.
So I had to learn it on the spot. They had the guitarist play me the intro, and I learned it on the spot. And there's 50-piece orchestra sitting there looking at me while I learn this
intro. No pressure.
Yeah. And she says to me, and she's a lovely lady, she says to me, "Don't you read music?" And I said, "No." And you could have heard an ant crawl across the stage. It was so quiet. But I learned the intro.
Yeah.
And then after all that, she says, "No, let's have the guitar player do it."
Yeah.
Which was a wise choice on her part.
By the way, speaking of Daly and Vincent, just last Saturday, they were playing the opera. Was it last Friday? You're right.
Friday,
it was last Friday. They were invited to become Grand Ole Opry members.
And, well deserved.
And we are proud of them. We've known them for some time. So congratulations to Jamie and Darren.
Yeah. Yes. Very hardworking and super nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was so surprised and tickled and happy for them. I was sitting at the piano when Marty Stewart came out. And you all have probably seen it online, so I won't reiterate it all. But it was just the look on Darren's face. Darren hit the floor, and Jamie busted out crying. And both of them are so deserving. They worked so hard.
They thought they were just doing a little something because it was their 10th anniversary.
Well, it was their 100th performance on the Opry.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of like the ruse that, well, we're going to congratulate these guys. And, oh, by the way, how do you feel about being the newest members of the Grand Ole Opry?
Yeah.
So I love those guys. I love their music. Everybody in their band is at the top of their game. They are the best of the best.
No, they're good guys.
So when did you figure out that your interest in playing music intersected with creating your own music? When did that happen for you?
Well, when I came here, like most young artists, musicians, I thought, you know, I'm going to be a star. I'm going to make it big. And so I wrote my own songs.
Sure.
And, you know, I went and... Of course, Ron Cornelius was very helpful. He produced some albums on me. And, you know, I just wasn't that, I wasn't what Nashville was looking for. And I realized that early in life. But I enjoyed playing in the studio so much with people like Pete Drake, Billy Hullett, Jack Solomon. These were the A-team guys at that time.
Right.
And I was so fortunate to get to do those sessions with those guys and learn from them. That's when I decided that I wanted to write music and record music, but I really did not have the passion or the heart to try to be the next guy on the radio, ride on a bus all the time. You know, I'm a homebody. I don't love to travel.
Yeah.
I have to travel sometimes with Daly and Vincent or Jimmy Fortune. I'm fortunate.
I'll love him,
To go out and do some dates with Jimmy Fortune. I love him to death, and you know, but I hate traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And when those guys ask, you just don't say no.
Right.
I mean, you just got to go. But, yeah, I love to write. I love to record. But you know what I love the most is seeing people's songs go from a rusty old work tape, just somebody flogging on an acoustic guitar and squalling into their phone, and they come in.
I don't know who he's referring to.
Yeah, Scott, he was looking at you just then, I think.
Buddy.
Especially the squalling part.
I was going to say, Scott does not squall. He's a great singer. But really, literally, people bring me, and people will send from other states, other countries, they'll send a recording of themselves squalling into a phone or a cassette deck, for that matter. And we take that and do what we've done for 33 years. And we make it, we make chicken salad out of chicken poop sometimes.
Yeah, interesting.
Now, that doesn't mean their song is bad, but that recording is pretty bad that they send. That's the best they can do.
Sure.
You know, I do what I do. They, you know, a friend of mine is a plumber. He does it really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that if you stuck me out there and said, "Hey, buddy, go fix that plumbing," I don't know how to do that.
Right.
But I do know how to make somebody's song go from 0 to 10 with guys like Brent Mason in the room.
Sure.
Absolutely. Sure. Let's take a break. I want to let our listeners know that this segment is brought to you by our very good friends at Main Street Productions. We've known Fred.
Fred for, Wilhelm, yeah.
For a couple of years.
Yeah.
Boy, I mean, they've won multiple awards for cinematography and editing. They produce pop, country, and bluegrass music videos. They've been doing it for over 20 years. And the nice thing is they also have done some feature films.
Yeah.
So their equipment is top notch.
It's feature film quality.
It's feature
stuff,
film
yeah.
quality yeah. stuff. So you can get these amazing music videos, guys, for not a ton of money.
No,
I mean,
not
he's,
really at all.
He's extremely reasonable.
Yeah.
So
I'm super nice and super easy to work with.
That's right. Him, yeah. And you can check out samples of their music videos at mainstreetproductions.org. And you can use the contact form to email or you can give them a call at 516-3076. Again, that's mainstreetproductions.org. And if you want to see Hino looking really good in a
baby.
Recent video, look up YouTube, look up Whiskey Bottle with my name, Scott Southworth, and
right.
you can see Hino doing some amazing
my star turn
thespianisms.
Yeah, thespianisms. Listen, we're going to be back with more of Buddy Hyatt here on the Music Row Show, so come on back.
I lie awake at night and call your name. The sound of my own voice drives me insane. I'm doing everything I can to face the truth and take this like a man. Won't you say hello to heaven for us? Tell Jesus we're not mad, but we miss you so much. Please ask him when he comes back to take us where you are and help me to forgive the man in that other car.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's our guest Buddy Hyatt doing a great song of his called Say Hello to Heaven. Great performance of his on YouTube doing that song at the Bluebird, which
yep,
you Google
yep.
that. Check that out. It's pretty awesome.
This song is interesting because how many times has it been cut?
Well, let me think. I don't know the exact number, but the notable people that have cut the song are, first
track.
Of all, a long time ago, and you're not going to believe this, Bobby Osborne.
Really?
Yes. Bobby Osborne was the first person to cut it.
Okay.
Kenny Rogers cut it a couple years ago and did not put it on his album because he left Capitol and went to Warner Brothers. So
darn
that
you,
song
Kenny.
Is, yeah. Yes. I'm waiting.
Okay.
I'm not giving up. Colin Ray cut it.
Mm-hmm.
And Daryl Singletary has it on his new album.
Right.
And just 2 weeks ago, Sammy Kershaw cut it.
Wow,
I'm
sweet.
So proud. And I got to play on Colin's version and Sammy Kershaw's version.
And David Frizzell?
David Frizzell, that's his version is just he and I. It's
okay.
just the grand piano at the tracking room
mm-hmm.
with David singing. There's no click track. There's no band. It's just me and him. And,
oh, wow.
And David did a wonderful version of it, and it actually was the theme song for Mothers Against Drunk Drivers for quite a long time. I don't know if it might even still be.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty rare, actually, that a writer gets to play on
it is rare,
the recording.
And I was present when Daryl Singletary cut it, but the fabulous Gordon Mote was the piano player that
not
day.
Too shabby.
And I was not about to complain. I was very happy.
Excuse me, Gordon. can
you tune your E string?
Can you tune that E? Tune that E on the piano. There's something there that's just...
Inside joke.
Oh, man.
Okay, I'm going to back it up a little bit. What was the Four Guys Opry stint? that you did, and how did that help you grow as a musician?
Well, it all came out of, I came to town, like I mentioned earlier, with no friends, no money, and no gig. My first gig was playing with Randy Travis at the Nashville Palace. And that was October, November, and December of 83.
Okay.
Well, the four guys would come in between spots and listen to our band.
Who's the four guys?
The four guys. Sam Wellington was the leader. Laddie Kane was the tenor singer. John Frost was the soprano or maybe lead on most of it. And Brent, I can't think of Brent's last name. He's no longer with us. He passed away a few years ago. But the four guys, they were a fabulous quartet that had been on the Grand Ole Opry since 1967.
Wow.
They were gracious enough to come in and ask me if I'd like to work for them at the place called the Harmony House, which was their business over on Murfreesboro Road. They had a little show club and do the Opry. And it paid a little better, and Randy was making it big, and he was about to get in the bread truck with one air conditioner on top with the wooden bunks in it, and I said, y'all have fun.
So miss you.
Yeah. But I love Randy and all the guys. I just, it was time for me to, 3 months was enough. I was ready to do something else.
Right.
Man.
But that's where I met great players. Like Rick Wayne, they call him LD. If you're listening to LD, I love you. He plays over here at the Scoreboard with Kevin Denny and those guys.
Okay.
But I met guys like that taught me what not to play.
So, which seems to be the theme we keep hearing, how important that is.
It is. And when I left the Palace and went to doing the regular Grand Ole Opry stint, I learned to stay out of the way, because that's a big band when you get on that stage. They've got staff guys. They've got background singers, even though they're a quartet. They had the Carol Lee singers. You don't play a bunch of stuff to get in the way of everybody else.
Right.
But I have to mention one bucket list thing that came out of that.
What was that?
I was sitting in the green room at the Grand Ole Opry backstage. This was at the new Opry House. It had not been open long. This was 84, I think. And I felt something tap me on the shoulder. And it was Roy Acuff.
Oh, wow.
And he had his fiddle bow, and he came back there and rapped me on the shoulder, and he said, son, you want to play some Wabash Cannonball? And I just froze, and I'm like, yes, sir. He said, it's an A-flat. Have fun.
Yeah.
Okay. And he was correct. Well, Jerry Whitehurst, who was the staff piano player, was ill that evening and didn't make it. Mm-hmm. So I got to play with Roy Acuff.
Wow.
Which
that's
awesome. One of my bucket list things.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So, we were talking to earlier about demos. You know, when you do demos, you hear the song pretty much right before you record it. You hear it, you talk for a second, and then you go do it. How about on a major label section? Session? Are you getting the songs further in advance? I mean, how does that differ for a player doing a demo versus a bigger label?
In my case, if I'm the session leader, mm-hmm. I get it ahead of time,
right?
Just like I do. Your guys, when you guys send me a song, an email, mm-hmm. you send it to me a week or 10 days prior to the session. I live with that. I listen to it. I think about what we could do to make it better. Sometimes
start all over.
Scott, I got a couple ideas. First off, the verses, gone.
Yeah, the chorus, that's gone too.
Gone.
Yeah.
You guys are way too hard.
Now, what I'd like you to do is not come in that day. Perfect.
Okay, done.
You guys are really too hard on yourselves. Cause you guys, your songs actually are in the format they need to be in when you send them to me. Now, as far as a master session goes, if I'm just showing up to play on it, I don't get to hear them ahead of time. The session leader does that.
And then it's just all charted out for you.
Whoever the session leader is, that's his job to get them ahead of time, write the charts, and then the producer says, okay, we're going to do this in this key, tempo, whatever. So I do get them ahead of time when I'm the session leader.
So really, for a player, they're really the only difference between a demo session and a master session is the time involved. Otherwise, it's the same gig, right?
Yes, it's pretty much the time involved on a demo. You've really got, publishers don't like to write checks.
Right.
And songwriters don't like to write checks. They want to get in there and get the very best product, very best quality for the least money, because they're now going to go pitch that in hopes of making a bunch of money with it.
Right.
So a master session, you're pretty much the label or whoever the artist is paying for it. They know what their budget is, and they're budgeting for a master. They're budgeting for guys like Brent to sit there and come up with that cool lick like Chattahoochee. They're giving them the time and the freedom to do that. We don't have the time and the freedom on a demo session, but we also don't rush through it and let it suck.
Right, right.
Yeah, right. That's the main difference between us and a lot of demo guys is they just play it and leave.
Yeah, let's once go through
like,
and go.
Yeah, yeah, where are we eating today? You know, yeah. But we actually try to make the demo sound like a record. And if you're pitching a song to a specific artist, we want to tailor it to where that artist is going to like it and hear himself or herself singing it.
Right.
You know, you don't put it in a groove that that artist is not going to do.
Right. Does that ever backfire? You're trying too hard to make it sound like a particular artist?
It hasn't backfired that I know of, but in the next hour, you're going to have a super hit songwriter up here that can tell you a little more about that.
Who?
Natalie Hemby.
Oh, wow.
So exciting.
But I will tell you that if your demo is too good,
yeah,
and I'm going to just, this was told to me, and I'm not saying I'm that good, but if you intimidate the singer also, I've had people not cut my song and almost not cut it. Kenny Rogers' quote to the background singers is, "I don't think I can beat that vocal on Say Hello to Heaven." He was intimidated by the demo.
Well, and I think something to think about, and I'm gonna talk about Natalie here for a second because
she can't talk back right now.
Right, right.
It's awesome.
Yes,
yeah,
she can. Yell over my
but,
shoulder.
But I saw something that I saw her talk about. You know, back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was this a swath of female artists that had range for days.
Yeah.
And I know that for male vocals, if you make it way too rangy, you can really shoot yourself in the foot, you know, and you know, just because you can sing, that doesn't mean
right,
you should.
Right.
Well, I've had people tell me, and this, again, I'm getting off into hearsay, but from my experience in 33 years of doing sessions, I've been told, and Reba, you can call or sign in and tell me I'm wrong, but she likes to hear male vocals on a demo rather than some girl singing her heart out because Reba wants to hear her, from what I've been told.
Yeah. Right?
A lot of them, and I believe that. I believe that that artist wants to hear themselves singing that song. They don't want to hear somebody that's singing the song so well that they can't match up to it.
I can just picture. Mm. I may have been born plain white trash. But never mind. Anyways, okay, we're going to move on. That was Frank Sinatra. Come on.
Oh, well, that's what that was.
You don't want your demo to suck, but you don't want it to be so over the top that they go next.
Yeah. Well, what about the opposite? I mean, do I've heard that a lot of times male artists can't hear themselves if a female's singing the demo.
It depends on the artist. I would bet you that some of the I bet Kenny Chesney doesn't care who's singing it. If he likes the song, he's going to do his thing to that song.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it's a guitar vocal demo.
Right.
If the song is good enough, that's all you need. I mean, I'm talking myself out of work here. It's great to have a nice full production demo. But if your song is good enough, you and a great guitar or a great piano should be enough for someone like Kenny Chesney or whoever, Reba McEntire.
Right.
The song is the most important thing.
Mm. Well, then when coming in and doing a session, let's say with folks like you, how do you go about trying to get something a little different when you come in to work with a bunch of studio pros? I mean, because, you know, you only have so much time, as you mentioned. Right. So if you want something a little off the beaten path, what's the best way to approach that?
Is to tell your session leader what you want and why you want it different. Scott has done that in the past, and I'm not picking on Scott, but he'll tell me what he doesn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And we go in there and we make sure that it goes the direction he wants it to go.
Oh, I was hoping you'd say you did it anyway.
I wouldn't have known the difference. we
have argued over intros before.
Yeah.
That's about the only thing we've argued over. Because honestly, the writer, it's their child. It's
right,
their baby.
Right.
You want them to get what they want.
As writers, though, what can we do to be fully prepared for a session? And because there is, you know, time is money. And so what can you do to make sure that you're not taking too much time or
have a correct work tape or be able to play the song correctly. We've cut a song before and everybody's going, okay, let's fix the fills in the second verse. Oh, wait a minute. I've got another verse. You know, they didn't tell me they had a third verse. It wasn't on the work tape. You know, you've got to be prepared. You don't go in unprepared. Really, you don't do that in anything in life and succeed. So, songwriting, demoing is no different.
Right. Now you tell me. Dang it.
Well, if you got people like Lonnie Wilson and Brent Mason sitting there ready to play your song, you
sure
want them to know that there's a third verse or a bridge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, I'm talking to producer Logan here.
That's okay. Take your time. You know, All right. We got nothing going on right now.
Well, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to hear about Toto. There's a story here that we haven't heard yet.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about the dog from Wizard of Oz. We're talking about the hit.
My wife thought that's what I was talking about.
Really? I'm going to go play with Toto.
She's considerably younger than me, and she said, "You played with who? Toto? Is that a dog?" And I said, "No. Let me explain. Go to Google."
Oh, bless your heart. Did you pull that one out?
As she's listening, she's probably going to slap me when I get
home. Oh, no, no.
Well,
no.
If she's anything like our wives, she's not listening.
Yeah, pretty much true.
It's that's okay. True.
You're probably right.
All right, we're going to be back with a whole lot more of Buddy Hyatt here on the Music Row Show, so come on back.
Did not want to live. My heart turned inside out. I had no love to give.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a song called Thanks then to You. Buddy Hyatt singing there, and I think Steve Lukather played with you on that.
From Toto.
Yes.
Bass player.
That was
guitar player.
The guitar player.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
He used to have a little band called Lust Lobotomy. Yeah. And in Studio City, I'd go to see him like once a week. It was amazing.
Steve is a super fantastic talent. He was nice enough to play on four or five songs with me, and that was one of them. His part hadn't come in yet when we faded out, but there is some good playing on there.
Well, it was so good that we could hear it in advance.
Right.
You know?
Right. But let's talk about Toto. How did you end up hooking up with them, especially as someone who didn't really care traveling?
Yes, this is a very funny story, and I say funny in weird and funny in hilarious.
Now, when you preface it like that, there's a lot of pressure for you to actually deliver.
Well, I'm going to deliver.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
This was 1998, and cell phones were very new, and I had one. Yeah, great big one, looked like a brick.
Yep.
And it rang one day at lunch, and I picked it up, and this British-speaking guy said, "Hello, this is Martin Cole. I'd like to know maybe if you perhaps would want to tour with Toto." And I said, "Who is this?" And I gave the guy so much CRAP. I gave him so much.
It's much better when you spell it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
good. Carp.
This is a PG show.
Right.
Anyway, I gave him so much crap because I didn't believe him. I mean, because I'm the biggest Toto fan on the planet. When I was driving at 15 with my driver's permit, I had 3 8-tracks. Ted Nugent, Ronnie Millsap, and Toto.
Wow.
So
pretty much all in the same genre.
Yeah, 1978, 79. So back to the story to get to my point. This guy started laughing on the phone because I was giving him so much grief. And he said, "Just tell me your address, please." And I said, "Okay." So immediately I think David Hungate. David Hungate is the original bass player for Toto, also a great friend of mine. We do a lot of sessions together. Mm-hmm. And he and I had done a lot of work just previous to that phone call together. And so I said, "I bet you he's up to something."
Yeah, he's messing
the trick.
I hang up the phone with Martin Cole, who was then Toto's tour manager. He told me that, but I wasn't paying attention. And I called David Hungate, and I start running him down the river. And he's like, David is very dry. He's very serious. He said, "Buddy, I had nothing to do with it." And I'm like, okay. So 2 days later, I get a FedEx with 7 Toto CDs. And a plane ticket, first class, American Airlines, round trip airfare to Los Angeles. And I thought, well, this is a pretty elaborate job.
Yeah, it's a pretty expensive one, too.
Yeah. Now, mind you, in this conversation, they never told me what they wanted me to do. I just assumed they needed a
second. So did you learn all the keyboard parts?
Well, I didn't. I wrote some charts. I wrote some numbers charts.
Right.
And this story gets better. So I go out there thinking that I'm going to play horn stabs and stuff, because Toto is David Page,
right,
the keyboard player.
Yeah.
He owns Toto Incorporated with his wife, Lorraine.
Okay.
So you're not going out there to replace David Page. I mean, that's a no-brainer. So I figured, well, maybe they need a second guy. So I get out there, the little guy in the hat holding my name up at the airport. And, you know, I get in this limo, and I'm thinking, wow, this is a dream. You know, they're limoing me now to meet Toto. And I'm not believing it, but I'm there. So I get there, and we walk into the power station, which is a great big rehearsal hall.
Yeah.
Kind of like SIR soundcheck. And there's 15 guys sitting in chairs waiting to go in for their audition. And I'm thinking, ain't no way I'm going to sit through this. I love Toto.
Do they know who I am?
No, don't they realize that I left a gig in the middle of it?
At the Holiday Inn.
At the Holiday Inn.
Anyway, I was trying to be a session player then. I was not yet, had not yet hit my stride. So I thought, you know, this may be a good thing for my career.
Sure.
So, and I hate the road, but hey, Toto. I mean, do I get to hear these guys play every night? It's going to be great. So rather than wait in line, they usher me right past all the 15 guys sitting in chairs, and I go into this great big room, and there is a keyboard, no drums, no PA. In the middle of this huge room, there's a single keyboard sitting in the middle of the room, and there's a microphone on a straight stand, not even a boom stand, on the other out in front of the keyboard facing the opposite direction.
Okay.
I'm thinking, I better keep my mouth shut and just see how this unfolds. They all come in. Got their sunglasses on indoors. They're too fabulous to shake my hand or tell me, right, have a nice day or how are you. None of that.
Right.
And David Pate sits down to the keyboard, and with one finger, as though it's way beneath him, and he's a good friend of mine, by the way. I'm not downing him, but I'm giving you the picture.
Right.
He takes one finger and plays a harmony part. And Bobby Kimball, the lead singer at that time, was snickering. He's snickering because he sees what's going on. Well, I had my piece of paper and my pencil, go back to the Nashville number system. I wrote exactly what he played on my page, interval for interval. And he said, okay, sing that. Turned out to be a chorus of one of their first early hits that I happen to know. So I sang, Bobby Kimball stepped up, he sang the lead, and I sang the harmony.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a couple of lines. No problems, no hitches. And he said, okay, let's do this one. And they pulled out one of their big ballads, I'll Be Over You.
Oh, yeah.
And he one-fingered the harmony part, and I wrote it down. And we sang it, and no hitches, no problems. And I had never been a background singer. I was a singer, but not a background singer. And I'll mention a lady's name here in town. Her name's Toni Jolene Clay. She had been doing a lot of background vocals for me at my studio, and she had taught me a lot about background singing. And she had hired me to sing background on a couple of things. That's all I'd ever done. So David Pate is getting frustrated now because he hasn't stumped me yet in two songs. So he says, let me see that paper. And I handed him the paper. And I'm not going to say the word he said, but it's it's four letters, and it stands for crap, but it's something else. He said, oh, that's that Nashville beep. And I said, and it made me mad, literally made me mad. And this, remember, this was 18 years ago, so I was younger and cockier then. So I took my piece of paper back, and I said, that Nashville beep works for me. And he got up, started walking, just didn't say anything, just started walking. And Steve Lukather standing there, he's mad because this punk from Nashville has just smarted off to the boss.
Right.
And he's standing there with his arms folded, and he's tapping his foot, and he's angry. And Pate gets all the way to the other end of the building. Just before he goes out the door, he throws his right hand up and says, you got the gig. And I looked over at Lukather, and I looked at Bobby Kimball. Bobby Kimball snickering still.
He never stopped.
No, he just loved every minute of it because he's one of us. Bobby's from Louisiana. He's one of us.
Yeah.
And Lukather looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, what gig?
Yeah, what am I doing?
Yeah, what are you talking about? And he said, we need a background singer. And I said, oh, okay. I said, well, what does it pay? And he told me. And I said, I think I can do that.
Yeah.
Never been a background singer before in my life.
Wow.
And so they flew me back home. I got my affairs in order and paid my bills.
So how did was it because of your friend that you had done some stuff with her? I mean, how did they even?
I failed to mention that earlier in the story. Martin Cole, their tour manager at that time, owned a condo on West End. He was renting the condo to a drummer who had gotten one of my CDs from his girlfriend, who was friends with my then wife. I'm sure you're never gonna be able to repeat.
Hold on, I'm getting motion sickness.
Yeah, and then his brother's mailman. Yeah,
so he goes to collect the rent,
uh-huh.
and this guy who I had given a CD to was jamming because it was Shannon Forrest playing drums. Shannon's a great, top-notch session player, It was Jimmy Carter playing bass. It was me on keys, and it was Troy Lancaster on guitar. It was very Steely Dan-ish, pop, funky, cool stuff. But he's cranking it when his landlord comes to get the rent. And his landlord was Toto's tour manager, and he said, "Hey, who is that?" And so he gave him my number, and the rest is history.
Wow.
Wow. I thought you were going to say, "I don't have the rent, but here's a CD."
I'll gladly pay you Tuesday.
Well, the rest of that story is Mike Porcaro, the bass player. Yeah. God rest his soul. He passed away last year. Actually, it was in 2015. We were on an airline somewhere in Czechoslovakia or somewhere with Toto a year into the gig. And Mike and I are talking. We got time on our hands. And he says, "You know why they hired you, don't you?" And I said, "I assume they needed a background singer." He said, "No." He said, "They hired you because you didn't take any crap off of Page, the band leader. Everybody else that came in there, their knees were knocking, their voice was shaking. They couldn't hit the parts because they were too nervous. He said, "You didn't care whether you got the gig or not, and you sang the parts right, and we didn't have to teach them to you."
Well, because you had no idea what the gig was.
I didn't.
What's there to be nervous
about?
That's
the secret right
that
there.
That goes back to being prepared.
Yeah.
I mean, if you show up at a session, you got to be prepared. Otherwise, you're wasting your money and our time.
Excellent. Speaking of time, let's take one last break.
Yep.
We're going to be back with one last segment with Buddy Hyatt. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
There's a plane leaving late tonight. Chicago Flight 405.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
There's a girl there who once cared for me.
We're here with Buddy Hyatt. That's a song of his called "Where Do I Go From You."
And always
love that. So we were talking about demos and stuff earlier. So what when you're dealing with the studio guys, when do you know when to speak up and when do you shut up? You know, because these guys know what they're doing.
If you're talking about the players, mm-hmm. I rarely speak up. With this quality of player, you don't need to speak up.
Okay.
All I can say is when you surround yourself with the best, it's best to keep your mouth shut and let people do what they do best.
So you're not in their micromanaging saying, "Play this note or that note."
I doubt they would show up for the next session that I call them for if I did that.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if there's something that I want to hear, then I think,
like someone like me coming in to do a song.
Oh, well,
you know,
we expect your input as the writer and we appreciate it and want it. We want you to say, "That's a little too fast. You know, hey, I can't get my words out." Of course, if we're good at what we do, we hear you singing your scratch. And if you're not enunciating well and you're shoving words together, I'm going to say, "Hey, wait a minute, back it down 4 clicks."
Right.
And my engineer, Zach Allen, who is one of the best engineers in town, young, hip guy that he's just fantastic. He's quick. He will, before I even get it out of my mouth, Zach's already in the computer dropping mm-hmm. it 4 clicks.
Wow.
And he's back to the top of the song ready for us to go again.
But never, you know, you call that a solo, you know? Let me show you how to play it.
I will tell you that if you ever hear a solo that James Mitchell or Brent Mason or Pat Buchanan plays and you don't like it, I will be shocked.
Yeah.
Those guys are, I mean, they're just the top of the top.
It's true.
What let's talk about if you're going in to do a project and let's say you're new to town or you know there's a lot of great producers in town, but not everybody's a good fit for everybody. So what questions should someone ask a producer before they decide to work with them, and what should they maybe beware of?
Well, Nashville is notorious. We're a long way from the ocean, but there's a lot of sharks. You can get taken for a lot of money real quick by somebody that will take you to a substandard studio, somebody's garage. Of course, there's a lot of great garage studios in town. I've got one, but I don't cut my tracks there. Mm-hmm. I just edit and do vocals and tuning and mixing. But you really need to know what you're paying for and who you're paying to do it. And you need everything in writing. And there's just been a lot of people that have come here and they've got Aunt Judy's money. And these people, they see you coming. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of good, honest guys, too, don't get me wrong. But there's story after story after story of people who have come here and spent 4 times what it costs to get really good recordings.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then what can someone ask? What are some questions that they can ask to make sure that they're talking to someone legitimate?
They can ask, who they're planning on using on their session, and they can Google these guys. I mean, there's some new young players coming up that are absolutely fantastic. A good friend of mine, Derek Wells, is playing on a lot of his.
Oh, my gosh. He's crazy.
You know, when Derek was just a kid, we were doing demos. You know, he and I became buddies. You need to know what you're paying for. If you're going to buy a car, you want to know what brand you're going to buy. Mm-hmm. You don't – I want to say – be careful when I say this. There's so many great players in this town. But – you can end up getting somebody's cousin that has a really nice electric guitar playing on your session if you don't specify who you want. Why do you want James Mitchell on your session? Because he plays hip, fresh, young stuff. Why do you want Derek Wells? Because he delivers every time he gets in the studio. Mm-hmm. You know, there are guys that are not those guys that are great. But I will just say that if you end up in an old school session and you've got hip, young material, those two don't work. If you've got old school players in an old school studio. Now, I will tell you, if you're going to cut some traditional country music, my neighbor and best friend is Jim Vest. Mm-hmm. He played Take This Job and Shove It, all the steel guitar on that. Mm-hmm. Set 'em Up Joe. If you want classic, real country, those guys are still in town and they still play their butts off.
Right.
But Jim Vest won't take a session on a new hip young artist and him be the steel player.
Sure, because he can produce it
because he knows who to call.
Right.
But your music needs to be produced by a producer that gets you. If they don't get you and get what you're trying to do and understand where you're going with it, they're not a good producer. And there's a lot of great producers in this town.
Okay.
So make sure they get you.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Buddy Hyatt is our guest here. BuddyHyatt.com is the website.
That's right.
We say it all the time. BuddyHyatt.com. Hyatt. Go check it out. Demo sessions coming up all the time.
The 11th and the 19th is when you have the new ones coming up, right?
Yes, we'll be at Stage Right Studio. Used to be the old Treasure Isle. It's been remodeled.
Nice.
New management, new people, great studio.
Well, excellent. I will be there on the 19th. I'm looking forward to it. We have another great hour of the show coming up. We got hit songwriter Natalie Hemby coming in.
She's been here for like 20 minutes, and she didn't run out after 5 minutes.
I know.
So that's a good sign.
That is a good sign. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, yeah. But the doors are locked. So, I mean, there's that. Yeah.
Ixnay on the Ockley.
Okay. We're going to be back in just a few minutes on the Music Bro Show. So come on back.